I'm Ben Shapiro. This is The Ben Shapiro Show. We are watching as the left basically uses its newfound power in order to call for crackdowns on everybody they disagree with. And they're telling you that it's not important, you know, because everybody that they disagree with, they'll still have outlets. It's fine. They'll still have places that they can go. And then the next step is, once they have essentially forced everybody into an ideological silo, then they blow up the silo. And this is what we saw with Parler from the left. The left said, you know, you don't like how Twitter handles its business? Well, just go have your own social media platform. So a bunch of conservatives said, all right, sounds good. Bunch of libertarians. And they formed Parler. And then the next move was, well, you know, they're a little too open over there. What if you just deplatform them? And we see this routinely throughout the media. The first move is, you know, you conservatives, why can't you make it on the left wing? Why can't you just join up with left-wing outlets? And then conservatives try and they say, no, you can't come in here because, see, you're conservative. That means you're bad. So they say, okay, you know what? We're going to go form our own outlets. And we're going to use the normal methods of distribution in order to achieve a market share. And then the same people who ousted them, who threw them outside of the house, they say, okay, well, now you guys are so bad that you really shouldn't have access to the market at all. You can see this happening in real time. And it's been happening for a while, but really it's coming to a head right now because every crisis is an opportunity for the left. I said the day that January 6th took place, the day that the violation of the Capitol took place, I said that that act of evil was going to have tremendous repercussions. It was going to be used by the hard left as an excuse to basically censor everybody they didn't like. And they weren't going to restrict that to people who actually engaged in criminal activity. They weren't even going to restrict that to arguments that may have fostered the criminal activity. Instead, they were going to use that to go after everybody they don't like. Because let's face it, folks in the media purvey things that are not true a lot. They do it a lot. It depends on the narrative. Right? How many members of the CNN staff spent months claiming that Jacob Blake was an unarmed black man who'd been shot by white police officers for no reason? Pretty much all of them. Right? How many members of the CNN staff, how many of their big anchors claim that Andrew Cuomo was the greatest governor in all the land for months at a time while Ron DeSantis in Florida was a scourge? Virtually all of them. They propel whatever narrative they want to propel at any given time, and they will fib to do it, or they will twist the facts to do it, or ignore countervailing facts in order to do that. But the thing is that if those countervailing facts are brought to light by anybody else, or if there's a narrative that they see from the other side that they don't like very much, then that other side must be silenced. So Brian Stelter, who is a sort of bellwether for the woke left infusing itself into mainstream media, Stelter didn't used to be quite as radical as he has become. I was on his show just a few years ago, and he said, you know, you have your outlet Daily Wire. Why don't people like you, why don't conservatives try to go into mainstream media? And I literally said to him, anybody at CNN going to try and hire me, you think, Brian? And the answer, of course, was no. Well, now Brian Stelter has gotten to the point where he is openly calling for a crackdown on Fox News. He's openly calling for a crackdown on people who disagree or on people he believes are purveying false information. Now, here's the thing. You've seen a shift in the language being used by folks when it comes to what sort of information should be given a platform and which sort of information should receive distribution. They shifted. It's a subtle linguistic shift. There are a couple of major subtle linguistic shifts that are happening right now as we speak, and we're going to elucidate them on today's show. One is the shift from misinformation. Okay, so it was misinformation and disinformation. So disinformation campaigns really those were a foreign weapon. It was foreign propaganda. So a disinformation campaign was the Soviets putting out false information that they hoped would be eaten up by the left in the United States and then propagated to a wider audience. That was disinformation, right? Disinformation means actual lies, things that are not true. Then there's quote unquote misinformation. Misinformation, which is the term that is now being used in the media all the time, is a term that means stuff I don't like, right? Maybe some of it is not true. Maybe some of it is true, but I just don't like the narrative. So the shift from disinformation, which is the idea that it is being propagated by a foreign power in order to push a particular agenda that is anti-American in scope, the shift from disinformation, right, deliberate attempts to falsify, to misinformation, meaning information that I disagree with or information that, you know, I think is wrong, right? That shift is pretty subtle, but it's being used at an extraordinarily rapid clip. It's being adopted by members of the mainstream media as an excuse to shut down competitors. And not only that, if you have ever uttered something that they say was not true, then the idea is that you must be shut down as a human being. So it doesn't matter that, again, CNN has propagated absolute untruths. And CNN propagated lies about Covington Catholic. CNN propagated lies about Black Lives Matter. CNN propagated lies about Trump. CNN propagated lies about Bush. CNN propagates lies sometimes. Does that mean that CNN should be deplatformed, that they should lose their ability to distribute information? Of course not. But that is where Brian Stelter is going to go. So now Brian Stelter says, you know what? we should reduce the reach of people that I disagree with, basically. And people who are on the other side of the aisle, because it's not as though they have a consistent standard of truth. It's not like, okay, here are the people who lie all the time, and then here are the people who tell the truth all the time. It is just that they believe that people who are of their opinion are pure as the driven snow, and people who are not of their opinion, if you can find any hook upon which to hang their banning, you just go for it. So here's Brian Stelter on Reliable Sources over the weekend.
Big tech platforms say they are removing lies about vaccines and stamping out Stop the Steal BS and QAnon cult content. Now, do these private companies have too much power? Sure. And many people would say yes, of course they do. But reducing a liar's reach is not the same as censoring freedom of speech. Freedom of speech is different than freedom of reach. And algorithmic reach is part of the problem.
Okay, so he then extended that over to Fox News, right? He basically suggested that Fox News itself should have its freedom of reach withdrawn. And when he says that it is not a First Amendment violation to restrict people's reach, what he's really talking about here are places like Daily Wire or places like The Federalist or anything that is right of center on Facebook, right? When he says that, what he means, that freedom of reach is not the same as freedom of speech, he's basically saying that what we need is for unofficial social media censors to stop the distribution of information. And he's saying that's not the government. He's right. It's not the government, but it is just as damaging as the government. When the town square is Facebook, right? And Facebook is not like the comment section over at Daily Wire, because Daily Wire is in fact a publication, right? We have a particular point of view. It is open and obvious what our point of view is. Facebook is much more like a town square. It was designed to be a town square. When they decide that they are going to censor particular points of view, and they are going to do so basically with the permission of the government, because the government has given them these carve-outs under Section 230, then they are violating their core tenet. Okay, the freedom of speech does not cease to apply as a principle in places where it's supposed to be the chief functioning principle. So members of the left are playing this little game here. And again, I'm libertarian on a lot of this stuff. I think the private companies should have an awful lot of freedom to do what it is that they want. I also think that rival public companies should also be able to, private companies should also be able to do what they want. I think the Parler should exist and Twitter should exist. I don't think that people should be deplatforming them. When you have neutral service providers that are denying service to one side or the other based purely on politics, which is what this is, then things are getting really, really ugly, really, really fast. And the only answer is going to be a either a rewriting of Section 230 or a reinterpretation of Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act, which we'll get to in just a second. But it's the principle that's amazing here. So you have reliable sources, right? This is supposed to be a free speech program saying freedom of speech is really important, but what we would love is for private companies to restrict that freedom of speech. Private companies need to stop people from seeing information that I don't like. And so you've had members of the CNN crew suggest that, for example, Comcast should simply get rid of the ability to distribute Fox News. You've had anchors on CNN claim the same thing. I've never seen anything from Fox News along these lines about CNN or MSNBC, by the way. For all the talk about how Sean Hannity and Laura Ingraham and Tucker Carlson, look at these opinion hosts with their strong viewpoints. Not one of them, so far as I'm aware, has ever called on Comcast to deplatform CNN or MSNBC. But CNN and MSNBC are calling for this sort of stuff, and they're calling for it pretty regularly. Joe Scarborough called for it last week on MSNBC, so did Mika Brzezinski. You're seeing Stelter call for it now. When they say that freedom of reach is not the same as freedom of speech, that's sort of like the argument that freedom of religion should basically be restricted to inside your house. Right? You should only be free to practice your religion inside your house. If you go outside your house and you're acting as you would in the business world and you're making decisions in your business based on your religious precepts, well, now that's not freedom of religion anymore, because after all, you know, you're acting in the public. Okay, well, if you restrict somebody's freedom of reach to essentially zero, then what value is their freedom of speech at that point? Then you've got a real problem on your hands. But again, the goal here is not an exchange of decent ideas or even an Overton window that is better policed. The idea is that people I disagree with should be silenced. So Oliver Darcy, who's a nice guy, but Oliver Darcy, he was on CNN and he says, you know, we have to stop comparing Fox and MSNBC. We have to stop comparing that because Fox should basically be deplatformed while MSNBC should not. Here's Oliver Darcy on CNN making claims about rival networks. It's an amazing thing.
To equate what MSNBC does or some of these other outlets do with what Fox does is nonsensical. There are outlets that have opinion hosts, but they're playing in the real world, in the world of facts and in reality. And Fox is spinning its own reality. And to suggest that there is an equivalence between the two, I think is not accurate and something we should really be careful to avoid.
Oh, really? It's not accurate. I'm old enough to remember when during the Michael Brown protests, an entire panel of people on CNN held up signs that said, hands up, don't shoot. and commentators like Sally Cohn were actually doing the hands up, don't shoot thing, which is a total fraudulent lie. It was a fabrication top to bottom. And he's saying that on CNN, the network of Covington Catholic, right, they had to pay a settlement to Nick Sandman for slandering him. You know, they're not the same. No, they are the same. They're exactly the same. It's just that you like the views on MSNBC and CNN, and you don't like the views on Fox News, and so that has to be silenced. Hey, over at the Washington Post, they're doing the same thing. So Margaret Sullivan is the media columnist over at the Washington Post. She has a piece today basically saying that everybody that she doesn't like should be silenced, and that's not cancel culture. So the left likes to play this game where they like to cancel people and then claim the cancel culture does not exist, which always makes it kind of fun and karmic when they themselves are canceled, which almost inevitably happens within about 6 months of saying cancel culture doesn't exist. You'll see there's this hilarious pattern in which folks on the left say, cancel culture is not real. And then 5 months later, somebody unearths an old tweet that was bad, and suddenly they're canceled by the same left that they were cheering on a moment ago. Because the mob loves you until the mob doesn't love you anymore. And so Margaret Sullivan has this piece over at the Washington Post. And her idea is the same as Stelter's, which is we should just withdraw the means of distribution from people I don't like. And that's going to have no consequences whatsoever for the American body politic other than good. So here's what she writes. According to Washington Examiner's Eddie Scarry, nothing less than a social justice mob descended on Politico after it gave a guest editing slot to right-wing flamethrower Ben Shapiro. First of all, cool nickname. That's really, thank you for that. Also, flamethrower, like, have you listened to 5 minutes of this show? Of course not. Of course not. None of these people do this all the time. Rush Limbaugh's a racist. They don't listen to 5 seconds of Rush Limbaugh. They've never even heard anything Rush Limbaugh's ever said. By the way, that was actually the first conversation I ever had with Elizabeth Warren, long before she was a senator. She was a professor at Harvard Law School. And I met her at the top of the W Hotel when I was being recruited for Harvard Law. And she and I kind of met, and she said, oh yeah, you're the one who wrote that book. Because I'd written a book already about bias on college campuses. And she started talking about Rush Limbaugh. And I said, have you ever listened to Rush Limbaugh? And she was like, no. I said, so why are you talking about Rush Limbaugh? But that's the perspective here. I'm a right-wing flamethrower because Margaret Sullivan, who I'm sure has never listened to anything I've ever said, calls me a right-wing flamethrower. And the goal of calling me a right-wing flamethrower, of course, is the idea that I should be deplatformed. So she says, Scarry mocked those, including many of Politico's employees, who thought Shapiro never should have been in charge of the site's popular Playbook newsletter, even for a day. Such objections are an effort to silence conservative voices, Scarry claims in another piece. Liberal journalists, quote, believe one side of the political spectrum to be legitimate, and the other should be given as few opportunities to have their opinions heard as possible. In other words, it's all part of a cancel culture, the catchphrase for how the masses supposedly gang up to silence provocative voices. I happen to think that the Politico staffers were right to oppose their news organization, granting its imprimatur to someone with Shapiro's history of performative bigotry. Ah, yes, that is my history, performative bigotry. It doesn't matter that I've given full speeches ripping the alt-right. It does not matter that I oppose the so-called Muslim. None of that matters, right? Because she doesn't know any of that. Doesn't care. She doesn't care. By the way, breaking news to Margaret Sullivan. She writes for the Washington Post. She doesn't like that outlets granted their imprimatur to me. In 2016, I wrote an op-ed for the Washington Post, Margaret. So you might want to talk with your editors over there. In any case, she says, Scarry is entitled to his opinion, and so are the objectors at Politico. And in defense of the idea that I should be banned, she cites a tweet from 2010. It is now 2021. Okay, just checking your calendar. One tweet from 11 years ago that I've explained 1,000 times about the Israeli-Arab conflict. She cites that. Literally, I have a piece on the website at Daily Wire, something no journalist I am aware of or opinion journalist I'm aware of has ever done. I have posted every single bad thing I think I have ever said and then either explained it or apologized for it, like in writing. Okay, so she cites that. This is always their go-to, is they find a tweet from 2010, right? That's nuts, okay? And then another tweet in 2019, it wasn't even a tweet. It was a statement on this show in which I was talking about Beto O'Rourke's view that he would be able to essentially get rid of religion in public life. And Beto O'Rourke said that he wanted to remove all nonprofit statuses from any church or synagogue that did not go along with his woke social justice nonsense. And I made an argument that Beto O'Rourke was going to go after religious schools, remove their nonprofit status, go after churches, remove their nonprofit status. And then the left's next move would be to declare that if you did not educate your child in the ways they wanted to educate your child, they would come to your front door. And I said, anybody who tries to take my kid away from me on the basis of teaching my kid values that I don't want taught to my kids, I will meet them at the door with the gun. Okay, I don't disagree with that sentiment. I fully agree with me. I was right. Okay, so she cites that as reason why I should not write for Politico. She says, in America, all these people get to talk. Because of the First Amendment, the government won't shut them down. That doesn't mean they're immune to other forms of accountability, though. And here's where we get into the fun part for folks on the left. They are the accountability. They grab control of the institutions. Then they bar you from the institutions. Then when you build alternative institutions, they air raid them. Right? That is the pattern that we are seeing over and over in American society. And then if you complain about it, then you're whining, right? Then you are part of a victimhood culture. Hilariously enough, there was a piece over at Axios about this by Jim Vandehey the other day, where he cited me, he cited Tucker Carlson, about the new right-wing talking point that the right is under assault from the institutional centers of American culture. The right wing had centralized around this talking point. And I emailed the folks at Axios. I was like, Jim Vandehey, the guy who wrote this piece, three weeks ago, you wrote a piece in which you said blue America is a sentence in every institutional area of America, and it was going to mean a rethinking of thought and speech in the United States. And then you wonder why we're a little paranoid. Just because we're paranoid does not mean you're not out to get us, because you guys are. And you're saying it every day. The sort of gaslighting where it's like, we're going to destroy your career. We're going to deplatform you. Why are you so whiny about it? It's like, well, that's not whining. That's us sensing a threat. And we here at the Daily Wire and other conservative places, we are going to mobilize to fight against that threat. And we are going to use every market possibility to fight against that threat. We're going to build alternative institutions. We are going to make way for thoughts that you guys do not want propagated. Tough bleep. Okay, so Margaret Sullivan continues along these lines. She says that it is not cancel culture if we cancel you. She says, night after night, Fox News offers primetime viewers its leftist assault on speech show. Josh Hawley, who needed only a few days to find a new publisher for his book, subsequently blasted the muzzling of America in an opinion piece in the widely read New York Post. Have any of these people been silenced? Hardly. And then Margaret Sullivan, hilariously enough, quotes Parker Malloy of Media Matters. Yes, there's an objective, nonpartisan, non-silencing site. Media Matters exists only to silence voices it does not like. All Media Matters does, every day, each day, they hire people to just watch shows like this one, clip them out of context, and then attack our advertisers and our subscribers. That's all they do all day. So she quotes them as a source for why cancel culture doesn't exist. I mean, my goodness, why don't you just quote O.J. Simpson on why murder never happens? Like, really? As Parker Malloy puts it, despite getting a spot on the front page of the fourth largest newspaper in the U.S., coverage across the entire Fox News lineup, a new book deal, an audience of more than 500,000 followers on Twitter, and a lengthy list of credits on IMDb, Hawley would like you to believe he is a man without a voice. Okay, so the goal here but here's the thing. You guys want to take away all of those things. All of those things. It's not as though you're saying, yeah, you know, Josh Hawley, if he loses his Simon & Schuster book contract, I'm glad that there are other publishers out there willing to pick up Josh Hawley's book contract. You are sad about this. You are angry. You don't want Regnery to exist. You don't want Fox News to exist. You don't want Daily Wire to exist. Quoting the person from Media Matters to the effect that Josh Hawley is not being silenced, all Media Matters does all day long is attempt to silence people they don't like. Okay, so here's what Margaret Sullivan concludes. I talked to the leading First Amendment lawyer and scholar, Jamil Jaffer, about all this last week. Jaffer thinks a lot of these complaints are misguided. They spring, he said, from a misunderstanding of what the First Amendment is all about. The point of the First Amendment is to take these kinds of debates out of the hands of government and put them in the hands of private citizens, says Jaffer, a Columbia University law professor and director of the Knight First Amendment Institute. It's not subverting the First Amendment to criticize a politician or a cable news host or a right-wing provocateur. That's the whole point of a First Amendment. Nor is it a subversion of free speech values for news organizations to make editing decisions or for social media platforms to make and enforce rules. There's the jump. I love that part. So I agree. You can criticize me as much as you want. Nobody's saying Margaret Sullivan should lose her spot over at the Washington Post for being the world's crappiest columnist. I'm not saying she should. Actually, I think she should keep that. I think they should keep paying her to write pap. Everybody has to make a living in this country. Okay, but I love that she says it's not even a subversion of not the First Amendment, free speech values. It's not a subversion of free speech values for social media platforms to make and enforce rules. Amazing. She says, these nuanced views don't get much airtime in the outrage factories of cable news and talk radio. Jaffer said, it's important we should tolerate diverse views. We benefit from a public square that includes ideas for making us uncomfortable. Oh, but she doesn't want that, does she? She doesn't at all. She says, it would help if journalists pushed back more effectively. CNN's Pamela Brown gave a masterclass in her devastating interview with Madison Cawthorn. Even if that sort of pushback becomes the norm, news organizations should be wary of handing these charlatans a megaphone. So instead of just rebutting people you don't like, instead, you should just not let them on the air. She says, you can call that cancel culture if you want. I call it responsibility. Yes, responsibility is making sure you never have to hear an opposing point of view or rebut it. You can just ban them outright. Excellent. I definitely trust these people. Why in the world would people on the right be paranoid that you guys are trying to ruin our lives? Okay, so here's the thing. It really isn't even about Margaret Sullivan going after me or about CNN going after Fox News. The thing is, everybody knows this bleeds down to the common person. This bleeds down to people who are not in media. See, I do have an outlet. We've spent millions of dollars building this outlet. Right? The outlet that we have is a very powerful outlet. It is still reliant on social media platforms to allow us to exist. Right? It's possible that you are listening to the show right now on Apple. It is possible that you are listening to the show right now or watching it over at YouTube. It is possible that you're watching it over at Facebook, right? All of those are platforms. All of those platforms started off as places that pledged themselves to open and honest debate. We are still reliant on them. But here's the thing. We still have our own platform. We still have the ability for you to subscribe. This is why I've been encouraging everybody. If you're on the conservative side of the aisle, you need to go and pay direct for the stuff you like, because the left is going to try and take it away on all the other mechanisms of distribution. But put us aside, because we in the media, it's our job to find a way to get our information to you. And in a free country, which the United States, thank God, still is, at least in most ways, we are going to find a way to get you that information with your help. But what this really is about is not about me or about Tucker or about any of the people who are in the media sphere. What this really is about is about you. It's about you working your day job at a normal corporation. It is you working your day job at a school. It's about you working your day job, not being a politically volatile person, just posting on Facebook every once in a while, living in fear that your corporation is going to crack down on you for saying the wrong thing at work, that somebody at work is going to find out that you voted for Trump or went to a Trump rally, that somebody at work is going to find out that you listened to this show, so you make sure that you listen to it during your off hours. And this is about you worrying that your friends and neighbors are going to treat you as a leper, a social leper, if you happen to have different points of view. See, in order for the First Amendment protections to abide, in order for the legal protections of government not to get involved in your free speech to continue, you need an attitude that is pro-free speech. You see how Margaret Sullivan conflates the First Amendment legally with free speech as a value. Those are not the same thing. Free speech as a value is a commitment by the common person, by corporations, by your boss, to the idea that there can be some dissent in the workplace, to the idea that there can be open conversation, that they're not going to fire you for something that has nothing to do with your ability to do your job. It means that you, among your friends, you're not going to attempt to cancel people in your social circle just because you have disagreements about tax rates, right? Or because they voted for somebody that you don't like, right? It takes a commitment by everybody to this certain level of diversity of values, right? It does. There have to be certain baseline, because that diversity of values stands atop a broader universal value, right? About which there can be no diversity. And that is a value that free speech matters, that in a free society, we should be able to treat each other decently and still disagree about things. That's the thing. You got Margaret Sullivan calling me a right-wing flamethrower. You know how many people I've had on this show who disagree with me? Tons and tons and tons. The Sunday special, nearly every week, somebody who disagrees with me in some way. Margaret Sullivan is calling me the right-wing flamethrower. I'm not the one who's shutting the window. I'm not the one who's welding closed the door. It's Margaret Sullivan doing that and praising herself for doing that. And it's happening every day around the water cooler. People are self-censoring. People are silencing themselves. It is bad for the country. The left is happy about it because they feel as though they are in control, and they are in control. There was a Pew poll that was taken last year. You know what it showed? It showed that a plurality of every group politically in the United States outside of woke progressives believes they have to self-censor. Every single one. Liberals, moderate liberals, say that they have to self-censor what they believe at work because they're afraid of the repercussions. The only people who never have to self-censor are the most radical leftists. Those people can say whatever the hell they want. They can say whatever they want. Hey, and that is going to destroy the country. It truly is. Okay, so here is how this manifests for the media. So what the media love to do in order to make this happen, everybody understands this is a really ugly thing that is happening right now. Even people who are sort of mainstream liberals understand that this is an ugly thing. That's why you had the Harper's Weekly letter last year, about 150 academics on the left, all of whom voted for Biden, I'm sure, not a single Trump voter among them, wrote a letter decrying cancel culture. And the left went after them. Right? All of those people are being lumped in now with people on the right, and all of those people are being lumped in with the worst offenders of people who violate sort of norms of decency. Because the goal here is to shut the Overton window so small that no one fits in it except for the wokest of everybody on a social level. So if you have the right political values, by the way, then you have a free pass to do whatever you want. And if you don't have the right political values, then you have a free pass to do nothing. And we will dig up everything you wrote back in 2002, and we will use it to ruin you. So let's take a couple of examples. So right now in politics, there are two stories. One is going to receive significant media attention. One is not going to receive significant media attention, at least not in the long haul. Again, the one that's not going to receive significant attention in the long haul, it's a story right now. So it's gotten a little bit of mainstream media attention, to be fair. It's not going to receive any over the course of the next 2 weeks. The co-founder of the Lincoln Project, right? The Lincoln Project is a bunch of supposedly ex-Republicans who went Democrat wasted tens of millions of bucks targeting particular Republicans across the country and then claim victory after the last election cycle. And it's sort of the most, not only never Trump and anti-Trump, but anti-Republican. They were going after people like Susan Collins in Maine. And so it turns out that the Lincoln Project, which is basically a bunch of grifters who suggested that they were going to say nasty things about Republicans and raise lots of money to do it. It turns out that the co-founder, John Weaver, has now been condemned by the Lincoln Project in the wake of allegations that the longtime GOP strategist made unsolicited sexual overtures to several young men, including one who was 14 years old at the time he received sexual messages from Weaver. The group finally, there are reports about this for months, by the way. Finally, the group put out a statement on Sunday when it became clear they couldn't keep running away from the story, saying John Weaver led a secret life that was built on a foundation of deception at every level. He is a predator, a liar, and an abuser. We extend our deepest sympathies to those who are targeted by his deplorable and predatory behavior. The Lincoln Project rose to prominence last year as they campaigned against Trump and others who supported him. Weaver, 61, helped co-found the group. He had previously worked on the presidential campaigns for John McCain and John Kasich. The New York Times published a report Sunday morning based on interviews with 21 men who alleged Weaver sent them unwanted provocative messages or solicited them for sex, often in exchange for the promise of professional help. The New York Times story followed reports about Weaver's behavior from earlier this month, including one by the American conservatives Ryan Gerdersky on January 11th and by Axios on January 15th. His original response, Weaver's, was that he was a gay man, which is the get out of jail free card of sexual abuse, at least for a couple of weeks, right? Is that if you're a straight guy, supposedly, who engages in predatory behavior, claiming you're gay is somehow supposed to give you cover? Most gay men are not predators. When I say most, I mean nearly all gay men are not predators. So that's a pretty pathetic defense there by Weaver. And so on Sunday, the Lincoln Project noted Weaver was never around the other members. He said, "We are grateful beyond words that at no time was John Weaver in the physical presence of any other member of the Lincoln Project." Okay, fine. So this will be out of the news, I promise, within 3 days. And the Lincoln Project will continue as though nothing ever happened because they have issued the denunciation of their co-founder and they will move on. Okay, maybe that's right. Maybe that's right. Maybe they never knew. Seriously, I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt. Maybe they never knew any of this stuff was true. Maybe they never knew that any of the rumors were true. Fine. Okay, do you think that the right is going to be, if they were a right-wing group, you really think that that would be let go within the next few days? Watch the news. You will see. The mentions of Lincoln Project in the news will go like this. Right? They're just going to crater. Meanwhile, every Republican in America will be asked about the crazy person, Marjorie Taylor Greene. Every single Republican for the next couple of years will be asked every time Marjorie Taylor Greene says a crazy thing to denounce Marjorie Taylor Greene. Because that's the way this game works, is that if there is somebody on the right who's crazy and you need somebody crazy you can focus in on so that you can slander the entire Republican Party and every conservative with that person, you just keep focusing in on that person. Right? John Weaver will not be in the news 2 days from now. Marjorie Taylor Greene will be in the news for the next couple of years at minimum, no matter how many times people say that she's a crazy person. Because by the way, she's a crazy person. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe. And if you want to help spread the word, please give us a 5-star review and tell your friends to subscribe too. We're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts. Also, be sure to check out the other Daily Wire podcasts, including The Andrew Klavan Show, The Michael Knowles Show, and The Matt Walsh Show. Thanks for listening.